Hello.
Goodbye.
Why? Hi, Daniel.
Hello.
Hey, it's Brian.
And Daniel.
And?
Dun-da-da-dun! Bill.
It's Bill. All right, this is Bill and Brian's Dude, Where's My Movie? The title of that podcast may change. We have a special guest, Daniel Spagnuolo. Don't pronounce it Spagnuolo. Here with us tonight.
Hello.
So if he chooses to join us on a reoccurring role, if you'll say, we're probably going to change the name of the podcast to just Dude, Where's My Movie? Anyway, so what's going on tonight, guys?
I'm psyched. I'm not drunk yet, though.
Why are you psyched, though?
Well, because Dule Hill and, you know, psych.
Okay. Made no sense, but we'll go with it.
James Roday.
Anyway, so tonight we're recording a very special episode of us coming back from the movies. And what did we see, guys?
Silent Hill.
Was it Silent Hill?
Silent House.
Silent House.
John Carter of Mars.
We did not see.
Safe House. That's what the guy wanted me to see. I bought a ticket for Silent House, and he gave me a ticket to Safe House.
Pretty much the same, I assume.
I assume. It's got to be the same, right?
Well, yeah, Denzel looks just like Elizabeth Olsen.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Absolutely.
But then again, so does Ryan Reynolds.
That's true. In fact, everybody looks like Elizabeth Olsen.
At least they do when I close my eyes.
That's a little disturbing, sir. But it's okay. We'll let that one slide. How's your Irish cream beer?
I don't know. I don't have Irish cream.
What do you have?
Just cream ale.
How is it?
Creamy.
Sweet. What are you drinking?
Surprisingly smooth.
I'm drinking Rasputin Russian Imperial Stout, and I wish I was drinking both of your beers.
Mine's very angry.
It's very angry?
There's a lot of green.
Yeah. Green is anger. Mine is, he refuses to die.
Mine makes her a reliable cop.
Well, how many times was Rasputin stabbed? Was it 13?
He was stabbed, drowned, beat to death with a club, hanged, shot, poisoned. I don't know. Watch Ghostbusters 2. They talk about it. Ghostbusters 2. Underrated.
And yet,
I feel like it's
inferior
it's
to the first. It's by far inferior to the first.
No, it absolutely is inferior to the first, but I still love Ghostbusters 2.
I don't know a lot of people who rate Ghostbusters. Have a problem with Ghostbusters.
I have found a few people who do.
I don't hate the movie. Of the two, it's the more fun.
Yeah, the more surprising people who hate Ghostbusters 2 are usually the same people who don't like Back to the Future. Yeah. And if you don't like Back to the Future, there's something clearly wrong with your head.
I hated Back to the Future.
There's something clearly wrong with your head. Why did you hate Back to the Future?
Because it wasn't long enough.
They made a sequel for that.
I know. Then I got happy.
Okay, so Back to the Future 1 and 2 put together for you was good.
No. The whole trilogy.
Plus
the cartoon series and the video game sequel.
The first two movies, the third movie I enjoyed, but I still consider the first two movies probably some of the greatest sci-fi comedy of all time.
Well, the problem with it is you can't watch the second one without watching the third because it ends on a cliffhanger.
Yeah, that's true.
Of course, I still like Zemeckis it. Never intended to make a sequel in the first place. It was the studio that tacked on the to be continued.
Eh, still good, though. I enjoyed it. What are your opinions on Back to the Future, Dan?
Quality film.
I agree.
Quality film.
I agree. Quality. Quality stuff.
One is the most fun in the series. Two is probably my favorite just because it does more time hopping.
The only thing we're missing from two is hoverboards and Jaws 12 or 13, whatever it was. Although I wish they'd never make another Jaws movie.
Yeah.
Ever again.
I'm surprised they haven't.
Yeah.
Have they?
It's time for a reboot.
I feel like
honestly.
They have in the last 5 years.
It's time for a reboot. I mean, they've remade Piranha.
They probably are going to reboot Jaws. I think you're just predicting the time flow and ebb of Hollywood.
It seems such an obvious idea. I'm surprised it hasn't been done.
Yeah. Spielberg will probably executive produce.
He probably will. I just don't know.
Shia LaBeouf will play...
have mercy, no. He'll play the son of
Richard
Dreyfuss.
They they should do Jaws, but from the perspective of the shark, kind of like a war horse thing.
Ah, make Shark the good guy.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's just eating people. He's just living his life.
He is. Make him you know, I had no issues with the Jaws character. It's everybody else that I had issues with. They were in his territory.
There's probably this underlying story that because of overfishing or pollution, that his source of food is going down, so he's just eating what he can.
Exactly.
He's the victim.
It's an environmentalist story.
Exactly.
It is perfection.
The reboot, he'll be a mutated shark.
Oh, God.
Cybernetic mutant shark. Zombie.
with lasers on his head.
Yes.
Yes.
Freaking lasers.
It's gonna be awesome. In fact, why don't we make the reboot right now?
No. They already did it.
Did they?
Deep Blue Sea.
Oh, such a bad movie.
And yet, surprisingly fun.
If my fiance heard me say how much I hated Deep Blue Sea, she would kill me because she loves that movie.
Patrick Jane.
It's a good thing she doesn't listen to these.
It is
Ice
a good
Cube.
Thing. I might have to
Was it Ice Cube
out.
In that?
No, it was LL Cool J.
It was LL Cool J.
I actually...
And
yeah, I
the lovely, it. Lovely, lovely...
I don't remember.
I ate a Totoro. No, I'm kidding. I ate a Totoro. She's hideous. Funny as hell actress, but hideous.
See, I don't remember that movie because I hated it.
Patrick Jane, LL Cool J, Aida Totoro is in it, and the lovely, lovely, lovely Saffron Burroughs.
See, I don't. Oh.
British model turned actress. She was in.
I know who she is.
She was in Wing Commander Heist. Was it Heist? The one with Jason Statham where they robbed the bank in London?
No, that's the Bank Job.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
I think you're thinking of Transporter 3.
I think so. Transporter 3. Wait. Speaking of which,
I've never seen 2 or 3. I've only watched the original.
That new movie with Jason Statham coming out called Safe. It's like Transporter 4, right?
Pretty much.
Oh, speaking of which, okay, we have to discuss the preview for the one movie we saw tonight with Guy Pearce. Lockdown or Lockout?
Locked in?
I don't know.
We saw two previews with Guy Pearce.
Yeah,
obviously.
One of them was Prometheus, which I'm excited as hell about. But, no, Lockout, or I can't remember the name of it.
I think it's called Lockout.
Yeah, his character's name is Snow. And the movie is about him going to a space prison to save the president's daughter. That's just Escape from New York.
Except
that's
in space.
All that is. That's Escape from New York in space. They even name him Snow. Take the first two. Come on, that's Snake Plissken all the way. That is Snake Plissken.
I will admit, though, it looks fun. And it's Luc Besson, executive producing and co-writing.
It doesn't mean it's going to be good. The guy has a shoddy record. I mean, he's made some great movies, but he still has a shoddy record.
It's getting surprisingly decent reviews early on.
I'm interested in seeing it, but more because, like, it's...
Well, it's the first balls-to-the-wall action movie really come out in years that actually looks interesting.
There's some better in the foreign market that have come out, but as far as American market, yeah.
I would argue this technically is an American market because it was made in Germany.
Well, it doesn't matter if it's made in Germany. It can still be co-produced in America. It's an American release is what it is. It's for American audiences. And I'm interested in seeing it. I mean, but more of the fact I'm interested in seeing it to watch it and go, okay, how many comparisons does it actually make to Escape from New York?
Oh, I'm sure it's lovingly reverent and slightly irreverent at the same time.
And I hope it is. I really do. I want to like it because I like Guy Pearce in general. And Maggie is Maggie Grace, right?
God, yes. She is so beautiful.
She is gorgeous. She's very
She was my main reason for watching the first season and a half of Lost.
Yeah, I never actually watched Lost.
She was so gorgeous as the spoiled girl.
Maggie Grace.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. I like her. I like her in general.
Lockout.
Movie's
named Lockout.
I mean, I'm still going to see the movie. I mean, it's just Escape from New York, though. That's my issue. Well, I could have grabbed you one, bud.
I think Lockout, genius. We just need Escape from the Moon. I think brilliant idea.
I think it is. It's going to be good. It's going to be fun to watch.
Escape from Big Trouble in Little China.
That would be awesome.
Russell played two parts.
Okay, no. Escape from Trouble, Big Trouble in Little China, while it's raining black rain.
Yeah.
And then throw Michael Douglas
in the mix. Escape from Big China, small China, where big trouble is happening.
I like it. I like it. Let's just make a movie.
No, I got it. Escape from Big Trouble in Little China in the Fog.
Okay, we'll go with that one. That's a good one. Here's one. Let's just make a Godzilla remake, except we'll call it Escape from George Lucas. And we'll just make George Lucas 50 feet tall, and he'll destroy everything that's dear and near to nerds' hearts everywhere.
You know, that's not really that fair. Granted, I think he's bastardized the trilogy, but...
He has.
But he has every right to. I mean...
Although, I will say this. I started watching the Clone Wars TV show, and I really like it.
Let's look at it this way. Ridley Scott has done just as many... has actually done more revisions to Blade Runner.
Hey, there's like 7 of them. There's but 7 he doesn't revisions.
He doesn't get the shit that...
But the thing
George
is
Lucas
that,
does.
Yeah, that's because those original ones, the theatrical runs, are still available. The ones from George Lucas are not available. He told people, I'm not releasing the original runs of these ever again.
And yet he did.
He still is just, they're just not available though. The Blu-rays are not those. You can go and download them. And they're called Star Wars Despecialized. I'm not telling anybody to pirate them, but you can go download them for free.
Illegally.
Yes, it's illegal. I can't say go do it. I'm just saying it's out there and available for you. But, okay. Ridley Scott, at least, has made his career off of...
Gladiator.
Okay, Gladiator was awesome.
Really? Gladiator in blue jeans?
Gladiator was amazing.
Really?
You didn't like Gladiator?
No, I loved it. I'm just giving you shit because it's fun.
Oh, okay. That's cool. I don't know. George Lucas, he'll forever be a hero to me for making the Star Wars trilogy. But at the same time,
here's something that
irritates me.
Here's something you would find interesting.
Yes.
Topher Grace.
I hate that guy.
He took all 3 of the prequel trilogies, edited them into a single 88, or I want to say it's roughly 2 hours long. Took all 3 movies and pulled them into less than 2 hours.
Yeah.
And it's apparently a more coherent version of the movie than all 3 movies watched back to back.
Yeah, I hear he took out most of the scenes with Jake Lloyd. And
oh yeah, he cut out. Basically, Phantom Menace picks up with the lightsaber duel between Qui-Gon, Ewan McGregor's character, Obi-Wan,
yeah,
and Darth Maul.
Really?
That's where it starts.
Really? I might actually have to watch that.
It's unavailable. It's only been aired once at a charity screening.
Well, I think they need to air that, like, now. George Lucas would have a field day, though. Mm-hmm. What's your opinion on the prequels?
I think they retroactively prove that Star Wars is a really shitty movie. We just don't realize.
It's because we grew up with it.
Yeah.
Like, we just don't understand that it is just, like, because it's been immortalized in nerd culture.
Yeah, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I'm all for Star Wars.
Me too, but I understand where you're going.
But well, the first movie really was kind of crappy.
Yeah.
When you sit back and watch it,
I know where you're going with this, and if you say a bad word about the Ewoks, I will jump this table and kill you.
They should
What's
have
the deal
been.
About the Ewoks?
Walks.
Originally, they were supposed to go to Kashyyyk, and it was going to be a planet of Wookiees.
Yeah, I remember that.
Which would have been totally awesome.
Yeah.
But Lucas pussied out and decided to go for the toy market.
I don't care. I love the Ewoks. And Return is still my favorite. Okay.
Empire!
As far as the prequels, Return. But as far as the prequels go, I have to say something. Revenge of the Sith, not a bad movie.
Not a bad movie.
It's by far the best of the series.
It's dark.
I think if there's one reason why Revenge of the Sith is a good movie, it's because of the movie, because of the scene of implied child murder.
Yes! Thank you! He walks in, there's Jedi kids, he walks out, pan out, they're all dead.
Yeah, they're on the ground, maybe not blood everywhere, but they're dead.
They're gone. They're in Jedi Force Heaven.
And that's why Revenge of the Sith is a great movie.
Great movie.
because a bunch of kids get murdered and you see their dead bodies.
I love Revenge of the Sith.
The ending of Topher Grace's flick?
Yes.
Is Anakin having the Darth Vader suit put on, and it just shows him lifting up and standing up. There's no no!
Okay, that would be alright with me. That could have been cut out. I have to say, though, that's cool that Topher Grace did that, but I still hate Topher Grace.
What?
Like, I've never liked him. Even as Eric on that 70s show, I've
now,
never
I'll
liked
jump
him.
Across the table and beat the
no,
shit out of you.
No, 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 I've never liked him. I've always found him that, like, whiny... He was almost like he wanted to be David Schwimmer in the 70s. Just kind of this whiny, neurotic, just
yeah, except
annoying.
David Schwimmer was actually somewhat reasonable with his insanity on Friends.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, well, Friends I can't really quote on because I've seen, like, one episode.
I'm sorry.
I could never get into Friends. I knew all the characters because they were on everywhere all the time when that show was around.
I feel like Friends is one of those things where
Rachel.
I understand that we're all part of, most of us, Brian. We all grew up watching it. But I'm like at a point in my life where I don't want to acknowledge it ever again.
Yeah.
So I was like, hey, remember that part in Friends? I'm like, no, let's let it let's leave.
Come on, they had let's a pet duck and a pet chicken.
See, I don't know anything. I really don't.
Chandler and Ross adopt a baby duck and a baby chick.
Okay.
And they remain fixtures throughout the series.
I mean, it's interesting.
They pop up like maybe twice a season.
I'm just not going to go back and watch Friends. Like, I sometimes, like, will be flipping through the channels and it'll be on. And I'll stop and watch, like, 5 minutes of it and go, I see why it was popular.
Paul Rudd broke big because of Friends.
I thought that was Clueless.
No.
Because he was huge in Clueless. That was a big movie. That
yeah,
came out
and
like
yet,
94.
And yet he didn't really do anything until after Friends came out.
No.
After he came out.
He did Overnight Delivery.
And I haven't seen this. I've never even heard of it, so.
It's a good movie. It's Road Trip.
He basically did a lot of underground and under the radar stuff.
I like Paul Rudd.
Basically, because of Friends and Judd Apatow, Paul Rudd has a career now.
Now, see, I would have watched Friends if Judd Apatow would have been, like, executive producer of that. Because then it would have been good.
No. Marta Kaufman and David Crane.
Judd Apatow, to me, is comedy gold all the time. I've never seen anything Judd Apatow put his hands on that I didn't like. Of course, then again, I know there's those movies he's produced that I didn't realize he produced them, and they probably sucked. But
what, Walk Hard?
Thank you. Yeah.
No. Walk Hard is actually very funny, but it's sporadically funny.
I was bored to tears.
I'm with you, Brian. I didn't get it.
Yeah, I just didn't get the humor in it at all. And I like it, and I wanted
it's
to.
All the little in jokes. Like, they're making fun of Brian Wilson when he went nuts trying to make Smile.
No, I understand the in jokes. It's just like I wanted to like it because I like John C. Reilly so much, and I think he's very, very funny. And, I mean, I'm always ashamed to admit this because it's a guilty pleasure of mine, but Step Brothers is one of those movies I still laugh at to this day.
Talladega Nights,
there's some of it that I actually really liked. But it took me a couple of viewings to even really get the jokes on.
I'm all hooked up on Mountain Dew!
The kids are funny. The Walker Texas Ranger, I thought that was pretty funny. But as far as, like, Walk Hard, I don't know. I just didn't get the joke. I felt like I was left out of some secret in-joke that everybody was in on.
The problem with it is it's a series of sketches that are barely tied together by a plot. And each sequence in the movie is a separate extended sketch. And each sketch doesn't always play together well. I mean, having Jonah Hill cameo as the grown-up version of his dead brother, who never actually grew up, was flat.
I gotta...
Describing that scene sounds pretty funny to me.
It does sound funny to hear it, though.
And yet, when you watch it on screen, it's like, okay, Jonah Hill's cursing. It's funnier when he does it in Superbad.
See, I like Superbad a lot.
Everybody does.
I really enjoyed it. Was Superbad, though, one of those laugh-out-loud movies for me? No, I didn't laugh out loud.
I did.
I smiled.
Repeatedly.
like, for me, like, Superbad was one of those, like, comedies that I didn't really, like, I didn't guffaw at, but I just, like, smiled at the jokes. And that's okay, though. That's okay.
The whole part where, they crash the other party, the guy that hits him with his car's party.
Yeah.
He ends up dancing with the chick, and she's spotting, and rubs it off on him.
I remember that, yeah.
I died.
Like, there's parts of it that, like, I kind of laughed at, but, like, for me, most of the movie was, it was like Adventureland, and I think that's with Greg Matala's, like, movies. Like, I smile at his stuff, but I don't, like, laugh out loud.
Yeah.
That's weird, because Greg Matala also did Your Highness.
I think there's a lot of pressure, like, as a viewer, when you see a comedy, to, like, do I like it if it makes me smile, or do I have to be busting a gut laughing?
Yeah.
Is it a bad movie if I'm not laughing the whole way?
It's not like the first time I watched Dogma. The first time I watched Dogma, there was a point in the movie I laughed so hard I actually passed out for a second.
Now, that is laughing hard, sir. Yeah. And I give you Dogma. Like, Kevin Smith's, like, early stuff, like, okay, all the way up until Clerks 2, like, all of that stuff, I really, really, like, enjoyed a lot. Clerks made me smile more than it made me, like, crack up. But then you had, like, Chasing Amy, which was brilliantly funny at times.
And insanely poignant.
Oh, extremely. I mean, Kevin Smith is brilliant. But, you know, like, I'm with Dan on this. Like, it almost, there's a lot of pressure on you as a viewer.
Yeah, people are like, oh, did you like that movie? Like, oh, it made me smile, you know? It's like
I mentioned Talladega Nights.
It's hard to explain to someone, like, I like this comedy, but I wasn't laughing the entire way.
There are parts of Talladega Nights that I think are insanely funny, but on the whole, I find the movie just extremely disjointed and more often than not flat.
But yeah, like, I mean, it is hard to explain to somebody, though. Just like, it's hard to sit there and go, I smiled, but it doesn't mean that you shouldn't see it. Like, there's some very funny moments in it.
And I'll admit, I like really stupid comedies. Dumb and Dumber is probably one of my all-time favorite comedies.
You go with that, sir.
But
I'll let you ride that train.
But more often than not, I prefer the ones where you have to think about it to get the joke.
No, I absolutely agree. Because I mean,
it's like when people watch it and they're scratching their heads and I'm laughing my ass off. Like throughout Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
That's a great movie.
It's insanely funny. But you have to be thinking about it to get all the little jokes.
Well, there's some very deep comedies out there that work very well.
And it's not so much that they're using in-jokes, it's just intellectual humor.
Well, I mean, you have, like, Funny People. With Adam Sandler and Seth Rogen and Jonah Hill and Jason Schwartzman. And, I mean, Aziz Ansari. I mean, you've got all these really great comedic actors. But for me, it's, and, you know, I hesitate when I say comedic actor and Adam Sandler. Same sentence. But
he's surprisingly talented when you can keep him reined in.
Yeah, but
problem is he's been allowed to explode so much on screen.
Yeah.
That most of his movies are nothing but bombastic feats of stupidity.
But with like Funny People, which I consider that Judd Apatow's opus and his tribute to the comedy genre in general and the stand up comedians, that was one of those movies that really, I mean, it has a lot of heart to it, and that's the beautiful thing about Judd Apatow's movies. They have this heart to them that you're not going to get with a lot of comedies, and that has been void from comedic films for a long time.
Yeah.
Like, what about you? What do you think about that?
I'll agree with you that I think Funny People was a good movie. It had heart.
Yeah.
It was more or less funny.
Yeah.
We'll say. But
Leslie Mann's hot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why not? Of course.
We'll go with that, yeah.
I'm not saying she's Judd Apatow's wife.
I'll agree with that.
Props to Judd Apatow for
But I feel like it was one of those movies that might have been an hour too long.
Oh, no, I agree with you. It goes on like 2 hours and 40 minutes.
It's a 3-hour movie, essentially.
It is his opus. When I say opus, like, time length included in that statement.
Yeah, it almost seems like two movies at some parts. You got the weird cancer part of the beginning, and then the weird,
like, the roommate relationships, and, like, just, like, Jason Schwartzman sleeping with the girl that Seth Rogen wanted, and, you know, by the way, spoiler alert if you haven't seen it. I mean, if you haven't seen Funny People, you would have probably seen it by now.
Seth Rogen's character eventually hooks up with the girl.
Yeah, the mousy girl, as they describe her, and I think that's really the perfect example of mousy, like, the way she looked. But, like, when you go to comedies, let's name a few. Let's go round table here and just name a few. We'll start with you, Bill. Some of your favorite comedies, why are they your favorite comedies?
You always put me on the spot. I'm never prepared.
Neither. It's from the hip.
Off the cuff, number one on the list would probably be MASH.
Well, don't go off the cuff. Shoot from the hip.
Yeah. Off the cuff, shoot from the hip. So, Bill, Smash.
MASH.
MASH. Why MASH?
Well, you put me on the spot. You said name my favorite comedy. MASH is one of the few that I can stick in. No matter how many times I've seen it, I laugh at it. Okay. It's extremely timely. It takes you back to a place where, at least for me, I don't have a point of reference. I didn't grow up in the Korean War.
Yeah, but it's still fun.
But it's this... It makes you kind of understand what... Like, my grandfather was actually in Korea. It makes you kind of understand what these guys had to go through and what they had to do to keep their sanity. Because that's really all it is. It's the literal synopsis of the movie is one of the most accurate that I've ever seen. Doctors serving in a Korean medical field hospital, army field hospital, adopt a lunatic lifestyle in order to maintain their sanity.
I like MASH. I think it's a good choice. Dan? Favorite comedy?
Favorite comedy.
Off the spot. I mean, right now, it doesn't mean it won't change later. As we all know, movies constantly change place on people's lists.
I didn't really have a favorite comedy. Let me think. I can tell you.
Spaced Invaders.
Great movie.
Well, the movie I've probably seen the most.
Yeah.
Mallrats.
I love Mallrats.
It's classic.
Jason,
of Kevin Smith's, it's the single most funny, consistently funny flick.
I think the best part about it is Jason Lee.
It is.
I think Jason Lee is a supremely funny guy whose talents have been squandered.
I agree with you. I mean, My Name is Earl was our guy. It had its really funny moments.
Most of it, though, was Earl playing the straight man to all the craziness that was going on, which didn't play to Jason Lee's strengths because he was always the odd man out and all of his best movie roles.
Right.
Well, Jason Lee's Brody is just...
Just like a cocky, weird dude. He's just like, funny dude. He's a funny guy.
Asks a lot of questions. I mean, great questions. I mean, just about...
It's, and the story's about his cousin Walt, who is... it's a veiled reference to Walt Flanagan.
Yeah.
It's funny.
And there's a lot of parts of that movie which is just bad. Not well done.
Yeah.
But I will admit it's not the best movie by
it's
the
one of two
of
movies that Kevin Smith has publicly apologized for.
But at the same time, it's that ridiculousness that admitting that it's kind of a bad movie, but still Jason Lee just kind of steals it.
And if you're a comic book fan, that's like a movie to really like sit down and watch because it's just so over the top.
So Mallrats would be my favorite bad comedy.
I like that choice.
Now, if you were to say what's my favorite comedy, just as a movie, as a movie and whatnot, I'm a giant Woody Allen fan.
Yeah.
So I would probably say Annie Hall.
Annie Hall's greatness.
But
I actually haven't seen much of Woody's older stuff. Although, the
Everything You Wanted to Know About Sex and We're Afraid to Ask
was a great sketch comedy movie.
Yeah. I think Annie Hall's his first movie that goes from that sort of more sketch, kind of zany comedy.
The, like, slapstick.
Yes, it's more slapstick. I think his favorite slapstick is Bananas, by the way. I just want to throw that out.
Bananas is amazing.
Bananas would probably be my second
What's the one where he took the Chinese comedy film and redubbed it?
What's
Tiger Lily?
Tiger
what's
Lily.
Up? Yeah. But, yeah, but Bananas is a slapstick comedy. Holy crap, it's hilarious.
Now, what's the one where he plays the guy who gets frozen and wakes up in the future and
He
becomes the messiah of the revolutionary movement that's trying to stop the dystopian government. Gets brainwashed into believing he's Miss America.
It's good though. But
I'll look that up.
Bananas is like my favorite part of Bananas is the part where like he goes to town to get food, but they just go to like a coffee shop, like a little shop, and they order like 500 sandwiches and like 500 cups
they steal
of coffee.
500 sandwhiches.
Yeah.
And they go back from Western Vermont. But I think another classic scene in Bananas that I don't think gets enough credit.
Yeah.
Is the part where the trial scene at the end where he essentially acts as his own lawyer and questions himself on the stand. He's going back and forth as the lawyer and as the guy in trial. And I feel like that's like a classic comedy scene that's like a, kind of a premise that's repeated later on. And I don't know if he's the first guy to do it, but...
But it's really funny because, yeah, like, Woody Allen himself is just my favorite... Like, one of my favorite parts in Bananas is the part at the beginning where he's fixing to have sex with a girl. Mm-hmm. And he just, like somehow, like, he ends up powdering himself in the entire room at the same time. Just over-powdering everything. And she's, like, not... Like, she's refusing to have sex with him.
It's a great film.
I've honestly never seen it. Like I said, most of the Woody Allen stuff I've seen is his newer stuff.
I like
mid to late his mid to late 90s stuff. Mostly Curse of the Jade Scorpion and Hollywood Movie.
Not his greatest work.
Not his greatest, but I enjoyed the joke behind Hollywood Movie.
Scoop was pretty decent.
But my point being, Annie Hall is one of those movies that's kind of goes back to... It's kind of serious, but at the same time, it's zany. There's like just kind of random... sketches, like
the thing about Woody Allen, what makes him work so well is his neuroses play into the movies.
Well, and he always plays a version of himself, or he always has somebody play a version of Woody Allen.
Which I want to see his newest, the
Midnight in Paris movie.
Just because I want to see how well Owen Wilson embodies Woody Allen.
He does a great job.
He really does.
And I really personally think that next to Annie Hall, because I'm with Dan on this one, Annie Hall is... Well, I don't know if it's your favorite, but Annie Hall and Hannah and Her Sisters are my two favorite Woody Allen movies.
I think Bananas, Annie Hall, Manhattan, that's
Manhattan's
classic.
Manhattan's great.
It's not as funny as Annie Hall, but Stardust Memories.
Stardust Memories. I almost forgot about that one.
I want to see some of his newer stuff, like Vicky Cristina Barcelona and Match Point.
The one that I saw more recently that I was extremely disappointed in was You Will Meet a Tall, Dark Stranger.
Right.
Like, that one I was in. And then Midnight in Paris, I was a little hesitant on seeing it. And I was like, okay, it's Woody Allen. He disappoints me sometimes, but... back to Dan's point, though, it's the Annie Hall is, like, that moment where he does transgress from the slapstick humor to the more...
serious relationship kind of comedy, like... Why are we in relationships when they're so...
Yeah, and my favorite part in Annie Hall is when they're in line to go see the Bergman film, and he breaks the fourth wall completely and just steps out of line, and he's just, like, addressing the audience about the entire situation. I about died laughing. And let's face it, man, Diane Keaton back in the day? Holy crap. Was she not gorgeous?
Good-looking
insane,
woman.
And surprisingly still damn good-looking today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She downplays her looks quite a bit.
Yeah, she does. Favorite comedies. I've got a split on three comedies. Because I'm going to go back to the old school, the mid-80s, and then the newer stuff. Old school, Horse Feathers. I'm sorry, Marx Brothers. Kill me.
Not familiar with that one, but I do love the Marx Brothers. Duck Soup, Night in Casablanca.
Horse Feathers is just one of those... I mean, I don't know how you describe a movie where you laugh every probably 10 seconds about some ridiculous situation. And let's face it, I mean, what makes those movies, for me at least, is Groucho.
Oh, yeah.
Groucho's smart-ass, smart-aleck responses, quick off the cuff. It's brilliant.
It's sarcasm at its best.
And Marx Brothers are one of those that are going to be...
And they're the ones that you watch if you want quick wordplay humor, because they're going to do non sequiturs, they're going to do puns, they're going to do...
And it's also extremely intelligent. I mean, when you look at those movies, they had some commentary about what was going on in life at the time, and they really capture a time when, you know, artists could stand up and say something about their country or say something about the government and not have an issue with doing it. Nowadays, it's, well, if you're too political in a comedy, guess what? You get chastised for it.
Or nobody, more often than not, rather than getting chastised, nobody just bothers to see it.
Yeah, but Horse Feathers, absolutely my favorite Marx Brothers. I feel sad for the generation behind us, because I have a feeling they're not going to know who the Marx Brothers are, just like they don't know who the Gremlins are.
Yeah.
Like, That makes me very sad. You have to know the Gremlins.
See, that's the thing. The Gremlins works as both a horror and a comedy. It's one of the first to actually fully pull it off.
It's a brilliant movie. Going back to the 80s, my second favorite is probably Arthur with the great Dudley Moore and Liza Minnelli.
Not the remake?
No, see, I'm...
Although I will say Russell Brand did a decent job. Everything else in the movie sucked.
Yeah, but you see Jennifer Garner in leather and a
corset.
That
doesn't justify anything for me. I'm sorry, you've taken a movie that is such, like, so close to my heart, and I grew up with it, and I'm so, like, I'm in love with the movie Arthur, and the Arthur character, you want him to live forever, because he's so funny, and he just enjoys life, and everything is hilarious, and he walks into a high-class restaurant at the beginning of the movie with a prostitute, and he's telling stories about times that he got completely wasted. He's that kind of character that everybody wants to be. Like, he enjoys life. Even if he is an alcoholic, he still enjoys life. And his relationship with his butler is just, when he dies at the end, spoiler for a movie that's, God, now going on 30 years old, if not...
Came out in late...
1980.
Was it 80? I thought it was late 70s.
No, it was 1980. Yeah, so it's old. And it's one of those movies that just... It's sweet, and it really had heart, but at the same time, it was also very... I mean, it talked very much about class separation between the rich and the poor, and it really addresses that whole entire situation. I love Arthur.
I will say, I prefer Dudley Moore's early work when he was still working with Peter Cook.
Well, Dudley Moore's early work was brilliant, and that's another thing. People in the generation behind us not going to know who Dudley Moore is.
They're going to know even less about who Peter Cook was because any movie he was in had Dudley Moore in it.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't make a movie without Dudley Moore. It was Dudley Moore that got famous. Peter Cook is kind of the unsung partner in that. And it's just sad because to me he was funnier.
Yeah, Dudley Moore is just brilliant. Did you see the remake, Dan?
Yes.
How do you feel about it?
Well, honest with you.
Yeah, go right ahead.
I saw it at the movie tavern. I saw it at this place where they serve you alcohol while you see the movie.
Ah, okay.
So I probably enjoyed it a lot more than I would if I had been sober.
Yeah.
I will say this much. It has Luis Guzman in it. And Luis Guzman is one of those character actors that will surprise you.
I like Luis Guzman, but my feeling for the remake is that Russell Brand, like, he really embodied what Dudley Moore was doing, and I think he did a really good job of it. It was just everything else in the movie that I didn't
know. It was just one of those
movies. It was a Hollywood remake. Yeah. That was really all it was.
Yeah.
And they were trying to cash in on a well-known name. That's all it was.
Yeah, and even... It really kind of surprised me when they remade Arthur, because, you know, at the time that they remade it, it's one of those movies that you're like... Well, I loved it, but a lot of people were like, I kind of remember it. He was a drunk, right?
Yeah, I've never seen the original, so...
I've never seen the original. I haven't seen the remake either, so I can't comment too much on it.
I highly suggest, if you get a chance, to see the original. It's on Netflix for free, so...
Not for free. For
$8.99 a month. I abuse the shit out of Netflix. They probably owe me... I probably owe them way more money than I'm paying for how much I want. Modern-day comedies, I'll make this quick, Happy Go Lucky, Mike Leigh film from 2009, British film. Really, really funny. It just cracks me up. It's just
Mike Leigh has some good stuff.
It's just really one of those. I mean, it just makes me laugh every time I watch it.
See, I put Mike Leigh and Robert Altman in the same box because they did the same. They almost made the same types of comedies.
Yeah, they do.
I mean, Robert Altman's Gosford Park is just brilliant.
Gosford Park is good.
It's one of those that you don't realize it's funny until you catch yourself laughing.
Yeah.
Because it's a murder mystery to start with, and the whole movie is really nothing but about, again, like you said with Arthur, it's distinction between classes. The servants and the people they serve.
I think I've always been interested in that distinction between classes. But anyway, moving on from comedies. Okay, just to let you know, guys, we will be resuming regular format. That was to give you guys a little intro to Daniel. Daniel, say hi.
Hello, I'm Daniel.
So right now we're going to move into our normal style of podcasting, where we talk about what we've seen this week. Daniel, start out.
What have I seen this week?
What have you seen this week, and what did you think?
Okay, let me see.
Besides Silent House, we'll get to that.
Okay. This week...
Kind of, like, it's a relative term.
All right. A couple days ago, I saw the movie The Puffy Chair.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Watch that off Netflix.
One, the girl who, she's made the movies about... She's made all those videos on YouTube, gotten famous, and then did a movie.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
The girl who directed The Puffy Chair.
No. I have no idea what any of this is. I thought it was a reference to Monty Python's Spanish Inquisition skit.
Anyway, I know the...
Bring out the Puffy Chair!
Even though I know the Puffy Chair is a Criterion release, but...
Is it?
Yeah, it's on Criterion right now. How was it?
Maybe we saw a different movie.
Oh, really? What was it about?
The Puffy Chair is a, by the Duplass brothers, the guys who did Hump Day.
Oh, I really liked Hump Day.
Hump Day was a great film.
Yeah, I really liked Hump Day.
I could go off on that, but, you know, we'll take a Puffy Chair.
Y'all are going art house on me again, aren't you?
Probably. I'm thinking of a different movie.
This is a movie that was Netflix had something to do, like, produce it. I don't know. That doesn't make sense to me, but... It was a movie, it was kind of in the classic Duplass brothers, I'm not even sure how you pronounce their name, so I apologize.
It's okay.
But it's that kind of mumblecore, where you kind of have the hand cams recording everything, and everything's sort of, perhaps it's improv, it's kind of subtle. They also did that movie Cyrus, which is more of a...
I enjoyed Cyrus. Yes.
Was that the one with John C. Reilly and the kid?
Yes.
Okay, so that
John
I
C. Reilly and Jonah Hill.
Yeah, that was their kind of big release.
Anyway, so what was The Puffy Chair about?
The Puffy Chair was about a man played by Mark Duplass, and he's going on a road trip with his high-maintenance girlfriend and his kind of hippie-ish brother, and they're going to pick up a chair, a puffy chair.
Okay.
For their father's birthday. So it's one of these films where they're going on a road trip, they kind of learn something about themselves, and essentially, at the end of the movie, it's about the relationship between the main character and his girlfriend, and then they have this big fight where she seems to want him to be someone else, more of a romantic, and he's not a romantic guy, he's this guy who gets shit done.
Isn't that normal?
He yells at people. He does his best. He's not totally romantic, but he'll go along with it. And at the end, it's this sort of ambiguous, are they going to break up or not? And he seems like, maybe I'll stay with her, and maybe I'll get married to her, because she seems alright. It's very ambiguous, you don't know what he's going to do, but then she breaks up with him, and then the movie's over.
Nice!
And he's like, yeah, that's what I wanted the entire time.
And but, how was the comedy holding up? Because I remember in, like, Cyrus and... I mean, I remember from Cyrus and... The Hump Day movie, or mm-hmm. Hump Day, they're never laugh out loud funny,
right.
But they're really, like, they're insightful, and they're
exactly.
really...
Exactly, it's that kind of comedy. It's very more, it's subtle. It goes for the subtle comedy, the situational comedy, where they just get into weird situations.
I like subtle comedy.
Yeah. I thought their style, it's sort of this, it's very low-key, very low-budget, but at the same time, because it's all hand-camera falling around, and because it's this... not over-the-top comedy, it makes it much more realistic. I felt like I could see this happening. I could see these characters being real, and this is sort of this... I felt awkward. There's, like, tension, and I felt the tension myself, because I'm like, this is very realistic.
The days of the simple comedy have gone way past. If it's not laugh-out-loud funny every single second, or if it doesn't have a catchphrase... People aren't going to remember it, unfortunately.
Right.
And it's sad, because there are a lot of really funny movies out there that aren't going to make... that aren't gut-busters.
Mm-hmm. They tend to be the more movies that are more concerned with, like, movie-making and storytelling than pure comedy.
And I like the... I don't know. I really have enjoyed some of the more subtle comedies of recent years. And I think that's where a lot of issue comes into... Oh, what's the guy's name?
Well, there's...
Mike Judge. his comedies are, I mean, when you look at King of the Hill, King of the Hill is a very subtle comedy show. It's very subtle, and his movies have that very subtle, they're not really over the top, even though they have the situations that become over the top, the characters are not over the top. They're very subtle in their responses.
Office Space is honestly exactly what would happen in an office if those characters acted that way.
Real quick, Tanner Sheet, by the way, yeah. What I was thinking of was Tiny Furniture.
Tiny Furniture.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. I was thinking of Tiny Furniture, not the Buffy chair.
I have to admit, I still haven't seen Extract, but I want to badly.
I've seen Extracts. I need to rewatch it.
And
I didn't enjoy it the first time.
I've never seen Idiocracy, but I understand it's developed quite the cult following.
Now, I've seen that movie 3 or 4 times, and I've loved it every time I've watched it. And that's one of those movies that I've never been able to pinpoint about why I loved it.
It's Luke Wilson being Luke Wilson, ultimately.
Yeah, I like Luke Wilson, too. Did you watch anything else this week?
No, not really.
Busy with school?
I don't know. I don't usually watch that many movies. I usually watch TV. I think the last movie I saw before... I've watched a lot of movies. Let me think. I did see The Vow recently.
Oh, God. Tell us about The Vow with Mr. Channing Tatum.
You know what? I'm going to say it. I love Channing Tatum.
Really?
He's just like a guy. He's like saying his lines, and it seems really awkward. And you get this feeling like, oh, this guy just... He's doing a bad job of this. But I like to think he's doing a great job of being like a, oh man, I'm just kind of a schmooze. I'll put some more blah, 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 blah. That's why 21 Jump Street, where he kind of plays a dumb guy, great casting.
I want to see that. I honestly want to see 21
I want to see that. He wasn't bad in G.I. Joe, but then again, he didn't have that many lines.
G.I. Joe wasn't a good movie, though.
No, it wasn't, but it was fun.
I was kind of shocked when Joseph Gordon-Levitt was in it. I was like, this guy really... Like,
that's because they offered him the chance to play Cobra Commander.
Yeah, but Joseph Gordon-Levitt's like...
He and Channing Tatum were best friends. That's part of the reason why he decided to do it.
But he's like an independent movie staple. Like, this guy does... And you know when you're watching Levitt, like, you're getting something that is, like, superior to the rest of what you've probably watched. Like Brick. Or Mysterious Skin, or Hesher. Okay.
Or
I know a lot of people.
The Juror. Or the underrated Demi Moore movie, The Juror.
What about The Lookout? Lookout was actually pretty decent.
Never saw it.
I liked it. So not much else.
No.
Yeah. That's cool. I watch a lot of movies, but this week I've been watching TV. Bill. Real quick, any TV that you can suggest to anybody? All right, Bill, go ahead.
I'll turn in my man card for the first one, but...
All right. We're listening.
Sex in the City 2.
Slightly less manlier than The Vow, but only a little.
Only a little.
I will admit, I have a Sarah Jessica Parker fetish. I love the woman.
So, like, a fetish, like...
It's the nose.
The horse face?
She's... To me, insanely attractive, and it's the fact that she is
actually very pretty.
It's the fact that she has that flaw that makes her even more attractive than most other women.
I've always found her pretty, but since Footloose, I liked her in Footloose a lot. I like Footloose. Shut up, guys.
Nothing wrong with that. Footloose is freaking awesome.
I like the remake. Shut up, guys.
Juliana Huff, freaking awesome.
No, I'm sure it's a great movie. I'm not judging it at all right now.
It's from the guy that did Hustle and Flow and Black Snake Moan.
Craig Brewer. Everybody's judging me right now.
But
it's
no.
Sad.
Sex in the City 2, I will not recommend to anyone. If for nothing else, then Liza Minnelli singing Beyonce's All the Single Ladies.
Which is horrifying.
It's horrifying. She's dancing. It's horrifying.
I can see why that would scar you for life.
The movie does have some funny points. Nothing to write home about. Honestly, I watched it because I was a fan of Sex and the City, which is a story for another day. Suffice it to say, I got really drunk, and the only thing on was a Sex and the City marathon. And I was severely drunk watching Sex and the City.
I think I can back you up on this, though, because I think Dan can testify to this. In college, the TV, like, we didn't have a lot of channels.
Yeah.
And I just remember they played Sex and the City a lot on one of the channels. And I actually, like, would watch it sometimes and be slightly amused.
Mm-hmm. It was... It actually had its moments, and... I mean,
like, don't tell anybody.
There's an episode of Sex and the City where Kim Cattrall's character has been dealing with the fact that she doesn't like going down on her most recent boyfriend because his junk tastes funky.
Funky junk, yeah.
Funky junk.
And she walks in, they're all having brunch together. She walks in, immediately sits down, and he goes, my boyfriend's sperm tastes funky. And immediately Charlotte's character, the prim and proper character, just bolts up and runs right out of the restaurant. Never returns.
Wow.
And I died laughing.
You and my fiance would get along.
And it's just weird little moments like that.
Yeah.
In the show.
I can actually, I'm not going to give you crap. Because I have seen both the movies. Did I like the second movie?
Yes,
no.
You did. No.
The first movie was actually surprisingly good.
Did I like the first movie? Some of it, yeah. Some of it was funny. Did I like the TV show?
Yeah. Aren't they in the second movie? They're like in Dubai or something?
Yeah.
They're in Abu Dhabi.
Can we talk about that?
Let's talk about that.
I just remember reading an article saying, like,
they got kicked out of the country, and they worked that into the plot of the movie.
Right. Something about them being disrespectful to the culture.
They were. They did actually, like...
Just like the most female, independent woman, sex... Spunk tastes weird going into this very conservative country.
They did, and they get kicked out for it. And, you know, I have to give Bill some credit here, because there's one scene in the movie where Kim Cattrall essentially shows her vagina off to a group of people.
She's fully clothed during the entire scene, folks. She's raising her skirt up. She has panties on.
Yes, you can't see her vagina.
That's good.
Yeah, not...
God bless.
Now, go back to Big Trouble in Little China. Maybe I want to see her. But it killed me, because the line she says is, I don't remember it exactly, Bill, you've seen it recently.
I wasn't paying enough attention to care at that point.
But she does say something like, yeah, see, it's a vagina. And she just, like, screams it out, and...
Now, guys, there is a reason to watch the movie. It's not enough to actually bother to go out of your way to watch it. But the lovely Irish actress, Alice Eve, is in it. And she doesn't wear a bra the entire damn movie. Every scene she's in, her boobs are bouncing free.
So anything else you've seen this week? Because if we discuss this any further, we're going to lose every male listener we have out of the 14 people who've actually listened
to
us.
Yeah, I'm about to leave the room myself.
I went back, I recently purchased Kill Bill Volumes 1 and 2.
Excellent.
On
movies.
Blu-ray.
Yeah.
And I've recently rewatched Kill Bill Volume 1.
Excellent movie. I like Kill Bill.
It holds its weight. Of Quentin Tarantino's movies.
If Kevin Smith did those movies, they'd be full of dick and fart jokes and a poop monster.
Which, oddly enough, I wouldn't put past Quentin Tarantino either, but... maybe not the fart monster, but...
Yeah, well, no, the turd monster. I was going to say maybe not the dick and fart jokes. I could see him putting the turd monster in there. The shit demon.
But... of Quentin Tarantino's movies, they're his most disjointed.
Yeah.
He really takes the non-linear storytelling a little too far, because the movie literally starts in the middle. And the only way you can tell that it starts in the middle is after she kills Vivica A. Fox's character, you realize she's already crossed Oren Ishii, which is Lucy Liu's character, off. And then the end of the movie is her killing Oren Ishii.
It was a good movie. It's a good movie. I like Kill Bill. I like Kill Bill Volume 2. My favorite Tarantino, Jackie Brown, today. But that's because I like Robin Forster and Pam Grier so much.
Big fan of Pam Grier. Big fan.
See, mine's
Foxy Brown.
Mine's a toss-up between Pulp Fiction and Inglourious Basterds.
I do like Inglourious Basterds. Let me ask you, Dan, because I've never gotten your opinion on Tarantino.
Tarantino. seen that?
I'd like to hear this, because I remember I let you borrow a copy of Death Proof, and you didn't like it.
Yeah, I did not like Death Proof.
Yeah, and I did. I enjoyed Death Proof.
I think
that was Robert Rodriguez's.
No, it wasn't. Playing with Terror was.
Was it?
Yeah, Tarantino did Death Proof.
My problem with Death Proof was I feel like it emulated bad movies so much.
That it became a bad movie?
Yeah. Yeah. But maybe if I was more of a fan, I'd be like, oh, I love this so much. What else? Reservoir Dogs. I've seen that one.
That's pretty good.
It has its place.
Yes.
I didn't hate it.
To me, it's the weakest Tarantino film.
It is. But he basically cribbed the entire cafe scene and put it back in Pulp Fiction.
He did.
And made it work so much better in Pulp Fiction.
Have you seen Pulp Fiction?
I have not seen Pulp Fiction.
We gotta sit down and watch
Pulp Fiction. Pulp Fiction is brilliant. It's...
Tarantino's...
Uma Thurman is still hot at that point. And not that she's not hot in Kill Bill, but she's lost some of her luster at that point.
I enjoyed Kill Bill.
Yeah.
Volume 1 when I did Volume 2.
Okay.
I'll throw that out there.
What'd you think about Inglourious Basterds?
I haven't seen that one.
Do you have a Blu-ray player?
So funny.
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to have to let you take that with you.
Inglourious Basterds is so funny. It's
actually really damn good.
Tarantino is one of those guys that I kind of have a respect for. Like, I can understand why people would like him, but at the same time, I don't have an extreme like for him. He's just one of those guys who's like, oh, okay, Tarantino. Yeah, I know him. He's got some good
comedy.
Yeah, I know his fan too. Hollywood right now, Tarantino and Kevin Smith are the best at writing dialogue.
Yeah, my issue with Kevin Smith is cop out. Holy crap.
Yeah,
that was the very first thought I had. It was like,
is there a guy that happened? Dark Side of the Moon?
No.
It's for somebody.
A little drunk.
It's okay. We're going to resume this. What were we talking about?
No idea.
Psychedelic funk.
Whatever. Hell.
Oh, man.
Well, guys.
I say some pretty bad shit about you when you leave the room, so.
No, that's okay.
You might want to...
Just so everyone knows, Diablo 3 will not have PvP at launch.
Okay.
Okay. That's my gamer news for the night.
Alright, that's good news.
No, it's not.
That's excellent news.
It makes the PvPers sad. But then they pee in other people's Vs, so...
I'll just edit this podcast
a
little bit.
Is that like, is that a thing on the internet, people peeing in Vs? Cause
I think it is.
I'd watch that.
It is kind of like there's only three trough-shaped letters in the alphabet. The U, the V, and the W.
I would hate to see it.
Arguably the X, but it's also got an inverted trough.
My middle finger is bigger than my ring finger.
That's
some movies.
A logical likelihood.
Okay, we were talking about movies.
Let's just talk about Silent House.
I agree with you. We should talk about it. We all saw Silent House tonight together in the theater. Okay, let's start with thoughts on Silent House. Now that it's settled down a little bit, like, what are our thoughts?
My thoughts are, I would love to see a movie starring Elizabeth Olsen and Elle Fanning.
Okay.
That's a little creepy, but
and,
okay.
And we'll call it Talented Younger Sisters.
I agree. I like Elle Fanning. I think she's an extreme talent.
She's an extreme talent. How old is she? 16?
16, maybe?
I'd still argue Dakota has a little bit on her, but she's made a lot of crap the last few years. She's never lived up to the promise she showed as a child. But she has the potential to seriously explode if she ever really breaks out of her teeny bopper mode.
I can see that. Okay, so back to Silent House.
Silent House, yes.
Yes, Silent House. This movie just recently came out. It's a remake of a Spanish film. The gimmick, I want to say gimmick, is that the movie is one long continuous cut and one long continuous take. And I thought it worked rather well to do it like this. I have my own issues with the film, but we'll start with Bill.
say I thoroughly enjoyed. I enjoyed it. It's been a while since I've seen a horror-styled movie that actually got under my skin a little bit, and this one not so much creeped me out as, at least in the beginning, kind of had me guessing.
Okay.
And there were some good jump moments, and the movie is primarily shot inside a house. And obviously Silent House being the name of the movie.
It's a quiet house.
Which really isn't all that quiet. But you get a very good sense of claustrophobia.
Okay.
Throughout the entire film. And we commented on that after we saw it a lot. And
yeah, the claustrophobic elements in it.
And
it worked really well.
The single camera, one long continuous cut, played well to that because you felt confined and trapped with her whenever she was cornered, which was a good 2/3 of the movie.
Yeah.
I won't spoil the ending. Some of the others may spoil it for you.
I feel like you can't talk about this movie without just spoiling the ending.
But
it's hard not to. So
the
we'll
twist,
put a spoiler warning in here.
Yeah, the twist, if you're paying at least half a decent bit of attention,
spoiler
you'll
warning.
Get.
Oh, okay.
It's not hard to figure out what's going on.
She's crazy.
Now,
but okay, so the spoiler is, I'm going to spoil this.
Okay.
The spoiler is, you find out that this main character, played by Elizabeth Olsen, she's a bit off her rocker, and she's hallucinating these things, and she was sexually abused as a child, and she's
by
like,
her uncle and father.
And yeah, by her uncle and father, so she decides to take her revenge on them and kill them and whatnot.
My only two problems with the entire movie are, there's a character that's introduced early on that doesn't, she literally shows up for one scene, as much as you can call a movie that's one continuous shot a scene.
Yeah.
But she shows up for about 5 minutes on screen early on in the movie, and then doesn't appear again until the very end of the movie, and there's no connection to hint at the possible role that she plays in the future, which I think weakens that character's part somewhat.
Now, when I go back and think about it, to me there is a there's a connection that wasn't so obvious to begin with, but that connection is when the character that's introduced, I think her name is Vivian.
Sophia.
Is it Sophia? See, I'm completely off on that. There's a part where Elizabeth Olsen's character, Sarah, I want to say, is she's speaking and she goes, "No, I don't remember you," essentially.
No, she says, "I really do remember you."
Well, she remembers her later on, but right when she first sees her, she doesn't have any clue who she is. And to me, that's when she says, "Yeah, I really do remember you," that to me is saying, okay, I'm starting to snap.
But there's no way to connect her back to what's going on.
See, I think that's the connection right there, is her reaction originally to the Sophia character. And to me, that's what it works at, is
the problem is, it's so subtle. If that's truly what, if it truly was the filmmaker's intention, what you're saying there, it's so subtle that you're not going to get it, as a general.
See, I liked it. I thought the subtlety worked at that point. The overall movie itself, I had my own issues with.
I will say it's a surprisingly tense flick, but my only other real problem with it, because I mentioned I had two, is that they actually pussy out in the ending.
Yeah.
How's that?
They took the obvious way out. Not so much with the ending, but the twist at the end. I think they could have done a lot more with. They could have played around with it more. They could have turned it around so that she doesn't win in the end, for whatever reason.
See,
she ends up falling back into the same pattern of abuse that caused her to snap in the first place.
So your objection to the movie is that,
and I'm not saying that's what they had to do, that
yeah.
I'm saying there are other ways that they could have gone. It would have made the ending a little more shocking.
Okay. I think the whole, like, the protagonist, like, this main person who's actually the killer, who's actually, it's quite overdone, and cinema today. And
yeah,
I honestly compare it to Robert De Niro's very weak Hide and Seek, which he made with Dakota Fanning, who we were referencing earlier.
Better movie with Elle, but I'm just kidding. So what? I've never seen this movie. What happens in that?
Robert De Niro plays a character who discovers. He discovers his wife was having an affair, and early on in the movie snaps and kills his wife, but makes it look like it's suicide.
Okay.
You don't realize that at the beginning of the movie. You really believe she killed herself. And in order to help recuperate, he and his daughter rent a house out in the country and move out there together. And his daughter starts describing these elaborate conversations and elaborate interactions she has with a supposed imaginary friend named Charlie. They never really give you any direct hints.
I wish it would have been Charlie Chaplin, but go ahead.
But at the end of the movie, you discover that Charlie is real, and Charlie is, for lack of a better word, an alternate personality of Robert De Niro's character. And he proceeds to snap once he realizes he really is Charlie and go on a murderous rampage.
All right.
It's a very weak film, and it's not so much the telegraph the twist, because you really don't see it coming, and yet you expect it at the same time. But they play it without. It's a lackluster attempt. Once you reveal that De Niro is Charlie, they don't.
Yeah.
They never push that boundary. It's okay. I know I'm Charlie now. I have to kill everybody.
So, is your objection to when you say they could have done it better, that they fell in a silent house, is your objection that the revelation that Elizabeth Olsen's character is really the killer, or is that...
I think it could have been done a little more shocking.
Okay.
And by that point, you're rooting for her in the first place, so it would have been, to me, it would have been an interesting twist to turn it around and make the bad guys turn the tables back on her, and she ends up losing.
Okay.
See, I don't know if I was necessarily rooting for her. I understood her a little bit better at the end.
I think there's that... I think the one scene that makes you really root for her is because, you know, she has him tied up, and you're kind of, this chick's crazy, she was molested, so you kind of have that sympathy for her. And then she lets her father go, and then her father just starts beating the shit out of her with a belt, and like he's just about to rape her, which seems over the top to me.
That's the point where I was like, okay, they're going to take this and go in a completely different direction than I expect.
If the character had shown a little bit more remorse, instead of just immediately getting free and then starting beating her like he's about to continue, I agree, it would have been a more interesting film, a more interesting ending.
The thing that pissed me off more about that than anything else is that really was like you go to the puss out route, and I agree with you on that, because that is the filmmaker obviously going, oh, we have to make this character likable.
Yeah.
We have to make this character likable. And that's just them doing that, because, I mean, I don't know what they did as a kid. They don't really touch on that that much.
You never really see much in the photos, and
I don't want to.
It's an implied thing throughout the movie. The photos play. The photos are essentially a MacGuffin throughout the entire movie.
Yeah.
Now you compared it to Hide and Seek from De Niro.
It's two different styles, but the same outcome ultimately.
Well, the thing that
different endings too, because
De
Niro
I went
loses
to,
at the end. But
the thing that I went to originally was you have this scene where she's under the table, and she hears herself as a child being put on top of the pool table, and she sees her father and uncle laying them down, playing games, whatever. But what I immediately tied it back to at that point was the movie 2003's High Tension, directed by Alexandra Aja, who also did the Piranha remake, The Hills Have Eyes. But High Tension has that same twist to it. The killer is really the person that you've been rooting for the entire time. She's just had that mental break.
Okay.
And it's got that same feel to it, and that's what I really thought felt best to it. The one thing I will say about the Silent House is okay. The continuous take.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. I really thought it helped out a little bit. The only problem I had with it is you could feel when that person was holding the camera.
Right. It is one of those, like, one of the main things about it, and as you called it before, it's kind of a gimmick. Mm-hmm. It's just one long take, which is impressive.
Yeah.
Like, from a movie, from a film standpoint, from a movie-making standpoint, it's very impressive. But at the same time, because it's doing this unique, almost homage to filmmaking, that's always in your mind, and you can never really get into the movie as just a horror, because you're just thinking about that shot and the camera.
Yeah, you're not ever getting that suspension of disbelief.
Now, I will say this much. This was my first movie with Elizabeth Olsen in any type of role. And I do want to go back now and watch Martha, Marcy May, Hannah Montana, Marlene. Because she is insanely beautiful. And there is a goodly portion of the early part of the movie that's dedicated entirely to her cleavage.
I will say, this movie would not work without her. She
really is talented, yeah. Folks. And I'm cracking a few jokes here. She really is beautiful. Bryant will disagree with me, but she looks exactly like her sisters.
See, I think she's gorgeous. I think she's a better actress.
So you're saying the other sisters, not so much gorgeous.
Yeah, pretty much.
They facially, they have the Olsen face.
She has the Olsen
but
face.
I think she's got...
She has very elfin looks.
She has more talent.
She has bigger boobs than her sisters, though, folks.
She looks like she eats more.
I might have to cut that out. But, yeah, I mean...
She's not jailbait anymore.
True. But
you pointed that out to me earlier. She's only 2 years younger than you.
I think I'm the only
she's
one in this
She's 12
crowd.
Years younger than me, but... Yeah.
Am I the only one that's seen Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
If you haven't seen Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene, you see it, you have to see it. It really is the only reason that Elizabeth Olsen got this role. But I will tell you this about this movie. This movie works because of her.
Yeah.
She has some great acting talent.
Yeah, it's essentially an hour of her crying and sobbing and looking anguished and breathing. And she does a good job.
Yeah, I've never seen somebody breathe so good. Yeah.
She does, my favorite part of hers is when she's under the table the first time.
Yeah.
The look of extreme horror in her face.
Yeah.
The guy's stomping around.
She's doing she's trying to control her breath.
She's basically about to cry, and she forces herself not to make a sound.
It was very well done.
And I have to say that is probably the creepiest moment in the movie for me, because it's when she turns around and her leg gets grabbed. I was unnerved.
Yeah.
It's the thing that I really liked about it was, go into the mental images that a person's having who is having a mental breakdown because she's realized something that's happened to her. And at the same time, she's having to turn herself into a victim. And physically, her mind is providing these hallucinations to turn herself into a victim just so she can deal and grasp with the fact of the acts of violence she's committing against those who betrayed her trust. And I really enjoyed that portion of the film. I didn't expect it to go there, but I liked that part of the movie.
It oddly went there.
It did, didn't it?
Yeah. Because they don't advertise that in the movies. They don't give you a hint. But when it happens, it's like, ooh, okay. Like,
yeah.
I was initially like, "What? Where is this going?"
Yeah.
Because
I fully expected them to stick with the there's someone in the house fucking with them and ultimately going to kill them strangers type aspect.
See, and I appreciate where they went with it. I just thought...
I thought it was clever.
My problem is I wish the ending would have been ambiguous. I do, because I thought if you were paying enough attention, you could figure out once she's under the pool table at the very end of the movie.
Oh, yeah, no, it fully clicked
there.
You
know what's going on.
Yeah.
See,
I hadn't fully figured out that she was the one doing it. I figured out that she was remembering things that had happened to her in the past.
And I think if you had seen High Tension, I'd just say, you would have known.
I think at that part I was like, I guess I didn't immediately think that this is a mental break, that she's remembering it, because I was like, this movie's it's not that great. They wouldn't be doing something that vaguely intellectual.
Yeah.
And I think, and then then they go. She goes to the bathroom right after that, and then she sees all sorts of weird hallucinatory kind of BS.
Wait, you know, like, very
the toilet on the wall that's spewing bleeding. Blood. And then at that point, I'm like, okay, so is this like a mental thing, or am I still like, are we in the realm of poltergeist? I don't know.
Yeah,
I still don't know where they're going with this.
Yeah, I can see your point on that, because to me, it really took a. I mean, the best way that I can describe it is not high tension, but I'd like to go back to the great Bergman films with some of the imagery that he used and some of the hallucinations he used. And, you know, I really... is this Bergman? Absolutely not. This is not even close to being that intelligent. But it does hint at a level of intelligence.
Right. I think the point where it really clicked into me that she was crazy... is when she sees a young girl in the bathtub filling up bottles, and, you know, she's just really cool with it. She doesn't seem like, oh, why are you here, little girl?
Why are you filling up bottles of beer?
Yeah, what are you doing in here? What's going on?
I see what you're...
Wasn't it creepy to have the other hot girl show up in a club outfit, club-going outfit,
yeah,
and give her a key that says, and say, the door's not the way out.
Yeah, I mean, the way out is that she has to... She is not yet. And
she
I
has to acknowledge what she's done
what she's
and what's happened to her.
Yeah, she has to come to terms with what's going on.
I feel, speaking of this kind of... it seems like two movies. Everything before her having mental breakdown is this high-tension sort of...
Yes.
Like, is she going to get murdered? She's running away. But at the same time, if they didn't throw in that twist, if it had just been killers in the house, I would have hated them.
Yeah,
I really
would,
because it's got the classic horror cliches, like, after she escapes the house earlier, she gets drawn back.
Yes.
It's like, call the cops, you know?
Call the cops,
that's
why, get the police.
Like, you're not even going to, like, phone the police before you go back in? And that was, like, the classic
but
horror
they did make,
like,
they did make
so
a point
stupid.
Of announcing the fact early on that cell phones don't work around the house.
Well, they could have gone to town, gotten the police, and, you know, and I was almost waiting for the uncle to accuse her of hurting her dad. I really was.
At that point, as soon as she left, I'm like, okay, I can buy this. But then once she went back, I'm like, oh, this is bullshit.
Yeah.
And I was just angry at the movie, and then they had the mental breakdown. I'm like, oh, okay, this is making more sense. Because before, it didn't make any sense why they would go back, but now it's making sense in a totally weird dream way.
And I think there was a couple times where I looked at you in the movie, and I was like, what the hell? Like, what's going on?
Here's my thought. You get the weird, creepy vibe from the uncle. There's a scene early on in the movie where he's going, look how you've grown up, yada, yada, yada.
And I connected to that, where I was like, this guy's being a little bit of a... I think I even, in the middle of the movie, was like, pedo bear.
But you never really get that sense from the dad. And yet it's made very obvious that the dad was the one doing it, and the uncle was, to some extent, being abused himself, being forced to watch. And yet taking a perverse thrill in the vicarious nature
of the facilitator. He was completely, like, I mean, he was the guy who was, I'm letting this happen. I should have stopped it.
He's, like, watching it happen for whatever reason.
But
he's the enabler.
Yeah.
The only real hint that the dad gives that there's not something quite right with him is the point early on where he goes, then it's almost said in jest, almost a joking bit. She goes, because he's not doing what you want him. He's referring to his brother, the uncle. He's not doing what I want him to do. The girl goes, he's not doing what you want him to do. And we all know, and he goes, and we all know if they just did what I want them to do, everything would work out just fine.
Yeah.
That's really the only hint. Mm-hmm. And then when he finally gets up and starts beating his daughter at the very end, it's like, whoa, that's a bit of a left turn. And yet, that's to me, that was the real jarring bit, because the hallucination bit with the toilet, it doesn't fit with the rest of the movie, but it doesn't take you out of the movie either.
See, I felt like the hallucination bit was more key to the movie to go, okay, this girl is obviously in reality.
And let's say, I thought...
Yeah, that was your first real clue to her not being grounded with what was going on.
Yeah, I thought the hallucination scene, I mean, I guess you could say it's kind of cheesy, but since it's seamlessly entered into this one long 88-minute shot, I thought it was also kind of genius.
Yeah, it was. For me, for me, the hallucination scene was a pivotal part of the movie where you go, if you hadn't caught on to that point, at that point you're like, okay, she's not grounded here. She is not connected.
I just thought of something. There is evidence of a cut in the entire movie.
When?
The point where she's under the table, she's watching what's going on, she sees the guy dragging her uncle's body in, and then all of a sudden she's the one dragging the body in.
I think they could have done that without...
No, there was no cut on that.
There has to be a cut, because she's under the table 1 minute watching someone drag the body in, and
you could do it without a cut, because they were focused on the body, they weren't focused on the feet. See, I think there was no cut right there.
It's debatable. I think she just got out of the table and ran around.
Yeah.
It reminds me of the, what was it? That movie with Jim Carrey, the
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless.
Where he's having a conversation with himself.
Yeah.
And then because I heard Michel Gondry, the way they did that is just have him quickly run around to play each part without any cuts. And then I heard Jim Carrey was like, why don't we just do a cut? This would be way easier. But if you hustle. Gondry's crazy.
Gondry is a little bit nuts.
If you can do one long shot with all these special tricks, he's going
to
do it.
I'd like to Be Kind Rewind.
I haven't seen it. Off topic, but yes.
Yeah, off topic, but yeah, it was a fun movie.
Off topic, but I didn't think it was the best movie.
It's one of those that...
it was pleasant, though.
It's a pleasant movie. It's a tribute to dreams and film. And, it's really actually... I suggest it, Bill, if you haven't seen it, watch Be Kind Rewind.
I've only seen two of his three, or four... major cinematic releases.
Which ones?
Eternal Sunshine and Green Hornet.
Yeah, Green Hornet,
Hornet I thought was fun.
And an issue.
And I felt it was extremely reverent to the source material while still playing to Seth Rogen's talent. Which was more because Seth Rogen wrote the film. Him and Evan Goldberg more than anything else.
It was interesting.
But in a lot of ways it fell flat. And part of that was because, as much as I love Christoph Waltz, he wasn't that
terrifying
as a villain.
No, he wasn't. Anyway, back to the Silent House. Could you guys recommend this?
I would honestly recommend it. It would be to a very specific crowd, but...
I would recommend it if they hadn't heard this podcast.
Yeah.
I'd say, you like interesting movies? Go see it.
It's worth going to see, if nothing else, for the gimmick itself, because the gimmick is what makes the movie work.
If you respect cinema, if you respect film, this is one of those movies that I would watch because of that, because of the 88-minute cut. It's also, there are parts that have an art house feel to them.
Yeah.
Or art house feel.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I think... Like, kind of going to what Bill was saying about the ending and what we're all mentioning, that if the ending was handled better...
Yes.
If we didn't have this weird... The father is just, like, an abusive dick.
Like, he just does
where he goes from this... It's so much of a 180 that that's the point that I was kind of taken out of the movie.
If we had felt more sympathy for the father, not saying sympathetic guy...
We spent half the movie thinking he's either dead or... dismembered somewhere.
If he at least shown some remorse, I think that would have made him a more realistic character, and that would make the whole movie and the result emotionally be more realistic.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying he's a sympathetic character, I'm not saying even if he had remorse he'd be sympathetic, I'd feel sorry for the guy.
Yeah.
But at least it'd make the movie more emotionally complex.
It would make the movie emotionally complex, but the thing is that the filmmaker said we have to make you like Elizabeth Olsen.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed the movie up until the ending. And like I've said before, I felt that they should have left it at a certain point and just made it more ambiguous. I felt like the movie ran probably about 10 minutes too long, and they could have just cut it at a point and just let her be crazy.
Yeah. I guess this movie...
My favorite part in the whole movie... I'm sorry,
I
didn't
interrupt. I was just going to say, I think this movie comes down to the ending. Either you're going to love it or hate it because of the ending.
Yeah. And personally, I just... The ending for me didn't work.
Or you might like... You might not like it that much.
Yeah.
Which I guess is how I feel.
Go ahead, Bill.
My favorite part in the whole movie is almost right at the very ending where you see this battle between the two. I hesitate to say personalities because they hinted an alternate personality, but they never really confirm it.
Yeah.
Where she starts to act very seductively towards her father, and then immediately realizes what she's doing and starts to punish herself for it. To me, that was the moment where it's like, she doesn't really know what she's doing at this point.
No. And I agree with you. I mean, it's... I wish it would have been more emotionally complex. And I think the filmmakers could have really done a great mashup between a horror genre movie and a character study.
Yeah.
And I think they could have succeeded with it if they would have been a little bit more emotionally complex. I mean, you look at a movie like Elizabeth Olsen's last film, Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene, which is the reason why she got this movie. But that's emotionally complex. It's unnerving and it's terrifying at the same time. And, you know, they could have done that with this movie, but they really... I mean, I don't know much about the filmmakers, but they really went for the, like, the genre crowd at that point.
I was surprised when, like, once shit started going down, once you started learning she was crazy, I'm like, this is really kind of artsy.
It is.
I was like, is everyone else in the theater enjoying this? Because this is getting in a realm that I didn't think it would go.
Yeah, when it started to go to that realm of almost the art house cinema, I really started to enjoy it.
Yeah.
And that says something about my taste, but it just, you know, I did. I liked it.
Now, I will say, they use some very clever techniques throughout the entire film.
They do.
The very beginning of the movie starts out with an overhead shot of Elizabeth Olsen sitting on the rock in the middle of a creek or a brook.
Yeah.
I'm not sure exactly which. And then she gets up and starts to walk back onto the path and back to the house. And you're sitting there watching, going, in the back of your mind, this is a continuous cut. That's a very difficult move to make to follow her back without having to cut.
And they do a good job.
They do a great job of, like, building that sort of traditional suspense where you kind of see the bad guy, but you don't ever get a good look at him. Everything's always, like, the camera's dropping. And
My other favorite part as far as techniques is the part where it's completely black. You see nothing on the screen but blackness.
That was actually, I thought that was quite clever.
And then,
as far as the horror element goes.
And then she has the genius moment where I've got a Polaroid camera. Click, flash, I can see it for a brief second what's in front of me. Walk a few feet, flash.
I saw this same technique used in the movie Apollo 18, and I can definitely suggest Silent House over Apollo 18. Apollo 18 was just a boring movie. I was bored to tears watching that. But
what, you didn't think Moon Rocks were horrifying?
No, not at all.
Come on!
It's just so boring.
There are so many Moon Rocks on this planet now, and they're all over the place in high places of power. The moon could be controlling our world.
It could be, but they control the tidal waves. That's okay with me. They didn't control the filmmaker's idea of what good movie was.
You know, I haven't seen this movie, but are you suggesting that the Moon Rocks are the evil villain in this?
They are.
Okay.
They're like little aliens.
They're parasites, basically.
Right.
Yeah, but you see them a couple of times. You never get a full glimpse of what they look like. And
I have to admit, I haven't seen Apollo 18. I spoiled myself on it because I was curious.
As you often do.
Well, I like to know about a movie before I go and see it. That doesn't, for me, it doesn't ruin the surprise.
And see, me...
Now, if there's a movie where I know there's a twist ending,
yeah,
I won't spoil it for myself.
My personal thing about movies is I like to know as little as possible before going in. Because I like to go in completely fresh. I don't want to know what the critics said. I don't want any preconceptions of what I'm going to feel.
See, and I'm the guy, if it's a movie based on a book, and I know it, and I want to see the movie, I'll go read the book first.
It depends for me on that situation. I mean, Daniel, what's your thoughts?
I'm with you. When there's a movie, I like to know as little about it as possible.
Yeah.
But I also think there's a statement that if you already know what's going to happen, if you already know the plot, it's a testament to good storytelling if you can still be interested in the movie or...
That is true.
If you already know what's going
to
happen.
That is true, too. That is absolutely true. There are some movies where I have done that. You know, if it's interesting enough, it's going to keep your, it's going to keep you there.
The Reese Witherspoon movie Vanity Fair. Most people, most of y'all probably haven't seen it. It's a period flick.
I've seen Vanity Fair myself.
It's an insanely well done movie. Believe it or not, it's a movie based on a British novel from the mid 1800s during Britain's occupation of India, mostly.
Yeah.
The movie is actually made by an Indian director.
Yeah. Gandhi. Did Luke, he get into movies?
Luke Gandhi.
But
Luke Gandhi.
I had read Vanity Fair in college and found myself surprisingly taken by the novel.
Yeah.
It was. You can't help but love Becky Sharp. Or is it Becky Sharp?
I think so.
It's Becky something.
The name sounds.
She's a conniving bitch, but you can't help but love her.
I think it's
you can't help but love her throughout the entire novel.
I took a lot of Victorian classes. I should know this.
But
William Thackeray.
William Makepeace Thackeray.
Yeah.
Makepeace.
I've seen Vanity Fair. I like it. And
but. I had gone into that with the preconceived notion of the novel, and was thoroughly blown away by the movie. And that, I'm just making this as a comparison for reading it before, because the movie thoroughly captivated me, and yet they cut out about a third of the novel.
And it is a testament to the movie. I just think I've always, going into a movie completely cold for me is the way that I prefer it. It doesn't mean it's always necessarily going to be the way that people do it, but. It's definitely the way that I prefer to go into a movie. And it's because I like to be surprised. It's because I like to... And I'm not saying you have preconceived notions all the time or form different opinions based off
See, of it. See, for me, it's more about, okay, here's the story that I know.
Yeah.
How is the filmmaker going to take what I know and translate it and still surprise me?
Well, like, when I saw Hugo, before I saw Hugo, I read the children's book it was based off of. Because I honestly wanted to know a little bit more about it, and I wanted to know what Scorsese was going to do, because I'm a huge Scorsese fan, and usually I want to know what he's going to do with something when I see it. That's why I watched Internal Affairs before I watched The Departed, because I wanted to know how Scorsese was going to handle that material.
Good for you, because I didn't realize it was a remake until after I saw it.
Good movie.
I think, kind of going back to knowing the ending before you see a movie, I think there's a lot of movies that do have sort of twist endings that after you see it, the twist made such an impression. You're like, oh, wow, that's great, genius. But then later you rewatch it and you already know the twist ending, and then it's just not a great movie. Yeah,
it's a boring movie. Yeah.
The best example is The Sixth Sense.
Yeah,
which
I can't
surprised
watch it again.
Honestly, I can still sit down and watch The Sixth Sense even knowing the twist ending, because that's the only movie where Shyamalan actually built in genuine clues.
The only Shyamalan movie that I can actually watch again and again is Signs. That is really the only one. And that may be because of my love of Aliens or Mel Gibson. One of the two.
Honestly, that's the one movie he made that doesn't really have a twist ending, too.
And I think that's why I like it so much, is because there's no twist ending. It's more about him going, everything that my dying wife said connects back now. My faith is not empty. It's a testament to faith. And it's a testament to refinding your faith.
If you don't know, M. Night Shyamalan was raised Indian. He was raised Hindu.
Yeah.
He's a Christian.
He is. He is an extreme Christian now. And you know, there's some great filmmakers that... I think when you look back on it, there's some filmmakers who put in that religious redemption into it. Scorsese's movies, when you watch them, they have a high tendency to carry themes about redemption and religious redemption. I mean, they really do. It's these characters looking for that forgiveness from a higher power. I mean, even if you look at Taxi Driver, he is looking for that place in the world where he becomes the hero. And he wants to be almost canonized.
Yeah, I never got that from Taxi Driver, but I think I watched it too young.
Well, I mean, you gotta watch Taxi Driver when you're a little bit older and can respect it. Because I watched it when I was young, and I respected it because I thought it was cool. But when I watched it when I was older, I was like, okay, I get some more of the thematic elements and the undertones going on.
I think.
See, I was. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I was just gonna say, I think a good movie should be you watch it once, and whatever your opinion is of it, the second time you watch it, you still think it's a good movie.
I absolutely agree with you.
Maybe like
watch it again 6 months later, and if you still like it, it's a good movie.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Because you don't want the... sometimes a novelty of a movie might kind of blind you whether or not it's an actual good movie.
That is a great point, because the novelties have a tendency to... like, okay, let's take, for instance... did it win the Academy Award for Best Picture, The Artist? Yeah, that's a novelty.
It's a huge novelty. I don't think it's a bad movie.
I don't either, but is it...
I'm not really sure who should have won that, but I don't really feel like it should have been The Artist.
There are quite a few movies this year that got gypped, honestly. David Fincher's remake of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo deserved a little more recognition than it got.
My issue with that is I thought it was a pointless remake. Because it was almost a shot-for-shot remake of the original source film. And I loved the source film. And I saw the remake, and I liked the remake.
But the problem with it is the same thing. Well, the thing is, most Americans haven't seen the Swedish version. And I can understand that, because most Americans won't deign to watch a movie with subtitles.
Yeah, they don't want to read movies.
And you're honestly missing out if you don't. If you want a good example, go back and watch Night Watch and Day Watch. They're Russian horror, sci-fi, fantasy film. Well, horror fantasy, more. No real sci-fi influence, but they're brilliant. And when you watch them, after you've watched them, watch the movies first. Then go back and read the novels they're based on.
Yeah.
This is one of the few times I'll actually recommend watching the movie first, because you'll understand what's going on in the movies, but then you read the books, and it expands on it so much, and it's brilliant, and you're watching it in subtitle, and Russian is such a brilliant language to start with. It's beautiful.
It's one of the harder languages out there. My subtitle movies, foreign films, I'm a huge fan. I believe that the foreign market has more to offer. Just in general, a couple movies this year from a foreign cinema that were excellent were A Separation, a Certified Copy.
Separation was good.
A Separation was really good, wasn't it?
I saw that one, yeah.
Yeah, that was a great film. Did you see Certified Copy yet? Yeah. It's on Netflix. It's available. Really great film. The foreign market, though, it's just got... and if you want to look for some really crazy... if you're into that more kind of just over the top, look at Korean films, Japanese films. I mean, some of my favorite movies have been Old Boy, Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, Lady Vengeance, Man from Nowhere, and the recent movie that just came out that a lot of people seem to hate was, but I loved it personally, was, what was that movie called? The one where I Saw the Devil, which was a great little Korean film. I enjoyed it. But anyway, we've gotten completely off topic. I think it's time to wrap it up for the night. And saying good night, good luck, and what I always say is, screw what the critics say, make up your own mind. This is Brian.
Daniel.
King Bill.
And this has been Dune, Where's My Movie?